Welcome to the This Week in Rays Baseball podcast. Here's your host, Neil Solons.
Thanks for joining us on our latest podcast, our first since the winter meetings, and perhaps our last in 2015. And we'll kick it off with the Rays Vice President of Baseball Operations, Eric Neander. And Eric, hopefully you're getting into a little bit more of a normal sleep schedule since the winter meetings concluded.
Yes, definitely. A more normal sleep schedule. I think several of us returned with some sort of bug, just the gift we received from Nashville. But yeah, you try to, I think... It's a hectic four days and change that you're there. To come back to regroup is necessary, and to get a little bit of rest over the weekend for sure.
What happens in this week after? How frequent are the conversations? How do you compare, let's say, this year to the last couple of years where there were sizable deals made, one involving Steven Souza Jr., one involving Will Myers, shortly after the meetings?
Yeah, last year, you know, we had momentum on, you know, the deal with San Diego, with Washington, I think prior to the meetings, through the meetings, and then it concluded, you know, shortly after the meetings. So that was a pretty busy couple of weeks just as that came together, and, you know, dealing with three teams, that just it adds some layer of complexity. We had more needs. We had more things that we were looking to accomplish last year at that time. This year, that isn't as much the case. More in listening mode, more in, you know, I think dreaming big, you know, in certain ways, to see if we can access impact type talent. So it's a little bit different. And with that, I think it's not quite as hectic right now. I think teams come home, and those that don't have something that's really truly active at the time, you know, regroup, catch their breath, and then, you know, probably start to pick it up, you know, around this time into next week if there's anything going on.
What is this time like? And does it kind of stop? You hit Christmas Eve and everybody kind of shuts down until New Year's? Or are there still talks with agents if, let's say, there's a minor league free agent sign? What's the whole period like leading up to the new year?
Conversations with clubs, with agents, remain, I think, active to the extent that there's anything going on. It doesn't slow down too much. Baseball, essentially as an industry, tends to shut down and close doors over the holidays, which is nice. I think it gives us collectively a chance to catch our breath as an industry, where you're not as concerned about getting beat by somebody else. But the concern's still there. I think the time on the phone, the time on email while you're at home is still there. But it does slow down at least a little bit, the activity, the chatter, the time in the office, I think, for the league as a whole.
You mentioned that, you know, kind of keeping up with what else is going on. How much do you watch what others are doing in terms of, oh, that free agent signing or that trade may have either opened up a chance for us to talk about something or closed a chance to talk about something?
We spend our fair share of time speculating on the various moves and how they might impact us or the availability of certain players. But oftentimes we find out that the speculation doesn't always match up with, you know, the feedback you would get directly from the team themselves. And so because of that, we try to limit it, but it does, you know, as teams commit the dollars that are being committed, they're doing it for a reason and to provide that player a good opportunity. And it does change, you know, a club's outlook and, you know, in some cases in a meaningful way.
And I wrote about it this week. You're not likely every year to find a 2007 Carlos Peña on the minor league free agent roster. But look, Joey Butler had an impact. Joaquin Benoit in the 2010 season, Eric Hinsky, Dan Johnson that year. I can go on and on about non-roster guys. How important is that piece of the puzzle as you guys try and find invites who have a chance to fit? You're going to have two guys on the 60-day DL to open the season, so there is going to be opportunity regardless of the spot that they play.
Yeah, absolutely. The you know, the focus, the attention, you know, you spend time aiming for impact talent. You spend a lot of time focused on that. That's the speculation. That's where the attention is. That's the fun part. But just as important are ensuring that you have the depth when injuries happen, when unexpected performances happen, that you have layers underneath that can step in and contribute. And the amount of fall off you have when somebody goes down to the next guy is just as important as the upgrade from, you know, the regular guy to the impact guy. And so it's a huge area of emphasis for us. You know, in any given year, you're talking about using, you know, in the territory, give or take a few, 45 players, you know, to get through a season. It's a lot. A lot of people have to contribute. We're fortunate, I think, where we are this year, where we have a lot of organizational depth that, you know, that's been drafted and signed that is coming through our system, that has left us with a, you know, much more of a homegrown team in AAA, you know, competing for big league opportunities now than we have in a while. That said, there still are some vacancies and opportunities for the minor league free agents, and that process is active. And, you know, you want to do the best that you can to have strong options in place. You mentioned, you know, Joey as a great example last year, and you know, if we can find a Carlos Pena circa 2007 or any Carlos Pena year that we have, I think we'd be pretty thrilled. And if anyone has any suggestions on where to get that guy, we'd be all in.
Good luck in finding him. Good luck getting some rest. Thanks for joining us on our latest podcast.
Thank you, Neil. I appreciate it.
Our podcast continues. We thank Eric Neander, Vice President of Baseball Operations for the Rays, for joining us. Now with us is Mark Topkin of the Tampa Bay Times. Topper, here we are going into the week before Christmas, and this, the last 2 years, as I mentioned, Eric, has been the week that the Rays have done something substantial. Now we're wondering, as we count down, is there going to be anything of substance this week? I tended to believe no, and then I started seeing some tweets that led me to think, well, maybe.
Well, and maybe yes, maybe no. I mean, I think we've all grown to learn and maybe appreciate, frustratingly so, how the Rays tend to stay under the radar as long as they can. And sometimes things that do get out turn out to be true, and sometimes they turn out to be old news. I mean, I think, you know, I've certainly written, you've certainly talked about, Neil, you know, repeatedly this offseason, the Rays are in a position to trade one of their extra starting pitchers. And, you know, whether that's Alex Cobb, who they talked to the Cubs about when they were talking about Javi Baez, whether it's Jake Odorizzi, whose name has come up recently, whether it's Drew Smyly, Matt Moore. I mean, I think they're in a position to trade one of those guys. We've talked again about trading one of those two relievers. You know, do they package those guys and make a big deal? I mean, there's still lots of scenarios out there. I think what's driving the market right now is, you know, we've seen those top-end starting pitchers sign. We've seen the prices be really high even for the bottom end of that top tier of starting pitchers. And I think there's a residual impact on the trade value. So the Rays may see it as a situation where the value of those starting pitchers they have is high, and this is where they make their move.
And I guess it's surprising that Jake Odorizzi became part of the news, because you broke the news that he was in, maybe not in line, but at least in negotiations for a deal to take away his arbitration years, and who knows, even maybe some of his free agency.
Yeah, I mean, that is true. The Rays did make an offer. I talked to his agent at that point. He was preparing a counteroffer. I checked in with him today, actually, and he said there's been nothing new. Now, you know, to me, the understanding I had was that those things were on parallel tracks. Like, the Rays made the offer, and I think if they sign a guy to a long-term deal, it is with the intent of keeping him for at least a few years. But they also had discussions going on as far as potential trades, as I mentioned, with all their starting pitchers. So, you know, I don't know if it comes down to an either-or, but maybe it's where they're both on the parallel track and the Rays, you know, decide which way to go. If they get, obviously, enough back for Jake Odorizzi. Now, some would say that of those starting pitchers I mentioned, Jake Odorizzi's value to other teams might not be as high because he doesn't have the flashy stuff. He doesn't have the flashy radar readings. But he's a guy who has been healthy arm-wise. He missed time with an oblique and has been a guy who shows the ability to be an innings eater. And, you know, maybe for a National League team, he's got a little pep in the bat, too. So it'll be curious to see which way the Rays go.
To the Rays, I would think they value him more, and that's why I'm curious about this whole situation. I would think that since they're in the market for an impact bat, they would want some sort of potential impact in return.
Well, and the Dodgers are an interesting team to deal with, and that's apart from the fact that Andrew Friedman is running them, and you get into these Jedi mind games. That's a little Star Wars reference for you there. But
I see you're into that.
Yeah. But these little Jedi mind games between Friedman and Silverman, each knowing how the other guy thinks, and obviously some of their staff and people that are familiar with each other. But, you know, the Dodgers are loading up on prospects. We saw that yesterday when they kind of involved themselves in the trade with Frazier from the Reds and the White Sox, and you know, upgraded their prospects, it seems like. And yet they also have a couple impact bats at the big league level. I mean, you could talk about a guy like Yasiel Puig, who maybe has worn out his welcome there and some think would do better in a less pressurized, less scrutinized environment. Well, maybe you could make a case that he'd fit in here. He'd certainly be an impact bat. They've got a young guy named Jock Peterson who came up last year, got off to a tremendous start, great praise, great, you know, expectations, but faltered a little bit. you know, maybe he's a guy. They've got a glut of outfielders as well. But, you know, if the Rays got Joc Pederson, then they have to turn around and clear out their own glut of outfielders. So a lot of interesting parts, a lot of interesting pieces here. The Dodgers may be the most fascinating potential trade partner. But I think they're talking to a lot of teams and working on a lot of things, too.
And you mentioned the Dodgers, and I think part of the reason they also were mentioned because they didn't get Aroldis Chapman. The Rays obviously have a big lefty power reliever in Jake McGee. And more recently, Hisashi Wakuma, we learned, his physical did not go as the Dodgers would have hoped, so they're still in the market for starting pitching as well as for their bullpen.
Maybe it's a two-Jake deal. Maybe it's a Jake Odorizzi, Jake McGee combo. And yeah, you know, I think you know, whether this particular rumor becomes fruition or something else, I do think, as we've said all along, that the Rays were going to deal from their strength. They were going to deal one of these pitchers, whether it's one of the starters, one of the relievers. Maybe it is both if they get the right package back. But, you know, just the market value right now is so high, and they have to feel comfortable with the guys they have beneath here. You know, that depth disappeared very quickly last year, and Matt Silverman was saying all the right things going into the winter meetings about being reluctant and cautious of stripping that depth down too much because then they might have to go out and scramble for starting pitching. So, yeah, maybe there's a back-end fill with a veteran guy until it bridges the gap till Alex Cobb comes back. But, you know, anyone they take away, they're going to miss if the idea is they're going to go into the season with the best rotation in the American League East.
Now, question. You mentioned market value. I'm amazed. I mean, when I read Wei-Yin Chen wants 5 and 100, and he's one of the remaining starting pitchers out there, and I'm like, he's kind of a middle-of-the-rotation guy. And then I see the bats, and I'm like, Mike Napoli got over $7 million with $3 million in reasonable incentives. That could be over a $10 million deal for a guy who maybe better is a platoon bat.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, part of that, Neil, is we have to kind of adjust our own thinking to that's the new normal. But yet for the Rays, they really haven't joined that level. I mean, you know, Stu Sternberg talked at length with me at the winter meetings in Nashville about the financial challenges the Rays face. Not the TV deal won't be for a few years down the road. You know, he feels like they're being left on an island. And you do see teams, you know, like the Indians, which is a team that maybe kind of lines up with the Rays to a certain degree, making a move and signing a guy like Napoli. So, you know, I don't see the Rays spending that kind of money for those kind of players, but they may be the only team left that isn't because that seems to be becoming the new normal.
It's going to be interesting to see how all of that evolves. You know, one thing that will continue to evolve for the Rays, in addition to trying to figure out what they want to do with the biggest pieces on their roster, is what they do with the smaller ones. And I wrote about it this week, is that, look, the minor league free agent six-year guys that you sign are fairly important. The only ones that have really been reported out there, you mentioned re-signing Yan Marinez, and Dana Eveland was a left-hander that was signed. But look, last year Joey Butler was important. You go back to 2010 and how big Joaquin Benoit was coming in on a minor league deal. Eric Hinsky, Carlos Pena. You know, you can look at several others, even the Dan Johnsons. You know, they may not help you immediately, but they can help down the road. And this is kind of an important part of the process, especially for a team like the Rays that has so few in terms of financial resources.
Exactly. And that's one of the ways that they try to mine value in the market, and you're kind of staying, you know, away from those top-tier guys. And, you know, whether I do think they need to sign a couple of relievers. I think they've got two roster spots to play with, even though the 40-man roster is full now, because they'll put Cobb and
Chase Whitley.
Chase Whitley. My mistake, Chase. Sorry about that. Put them on the 60-day DL once they get to the regular season. So they'll have two spots to play with. I could see them bringing in a couple of relievers. I mean, specific names, I'm not sure yet. But, you know, someone in the Burke Badenhop, Craig Breslow type, a veteran guy who's been around, can help them out. I mean, they've got some power young arms, but they need some veteran guys there. I mean, Danny Farquhar has an option, so he's not locked into the bullpen. Steve Geltz has an option. He's not locked into the bullpen. So there's going to be one, two, maybe three spots in there. Obviously, if they trade McGee or Boxberger, even a bigger need for somebody with some, you know, veteran experience and some success behind them. So I think you'll see them sign a couple of those type of guys, and they can definitely pay off. I mean, we've seen it time and time again how that guy ends up helping out the Rays going forward.
One question going forward is Hall of Fame voting. You're going to get some vacation time, and then we'll find out how you voted in the near future. But this week was an interesting one because, and I don't think it was surprising, Pete Rose found out that his lifetime ban was going to remain in effect, especially when we learned that he was still betting on not only sports, but still betting on baseball. Hadn't reformed his life at all. But I think what most fans don't understand is the issue of a lifetime ban and the issue is whether he's eligible for the Hall of Fame are two separate categories, correct?
They are, and yet the Hall of Fame has essentially made it if you're on the ineligible list for Major League Baseball, you're not a candidate for the Hall of Fame. So I think the Hall of Fame is going to have to take the action first and say that he would be eligible to be voted on, And then, you know, if he were to end up on the ballot, he's not going to win as a write-in. People aren't going to be that motivated. But if he were to end up on the ballot, if he were to be subject to the Veterans Committee consideration, which is a little bit more of a dark secret, you know, smoky room kind of balloting, or the regular general balloting, since he hasn't appeared on the ballot, I think either one of those would be a very interesting result. And I don't know what would happen. I mean, there's so much debate right now over the quote-unquote steroid guys and the suspected steroid guys. Now, what would you do if you added Pete Rose to that list?
Well, I mean, you voted for Barry Bonds in the past, so would you be consistent with Pete Rose? I mean, is what he did any worse than what Barry Bonds has done in terms of the reputation of the game?
Well, see, that's where you really get into some interesting parallels, Niels, because part of the reason that I vote for Barry Bonds is, and I draw the line in that he never failed a test. Now, we all have suspicions. We've all heard rumors and allegations. You know, I don't vote for Rafael Palmeiro because he did fail a test. So, you know, I've drawn a line, you know, that I think is fairly distinct. Other people, it's more of a blurry situation. There is no right answer. There's no wrong answer. I mean, I can say this. Pete Rose's playing career was without a doubt a Hall of Fame playing career. Now, if he were to appear on the ballot, how would I translate that? I would tend to think I would reward him for his playing career, but I would reserve the right to kind of consider all of the surrounding issues.
And I can totally understand that. And I'm anxious to see your ballot as you publish it. So we'll see that in January, right?
Yes. Actually, the ballots are due December 21st this year. And I notice a number of my colleagues have kind of followed along with that idea of posting a picture of them on Twitter. So I should have it out there over the next week or so, I would think.
Looking forward to that. And hopefully you're looking forward to some time off. Well-deserved. We appreciate a few minutes on our podcast, and happy holidays.
Same to you, Neil. Always a pleasure, but don't call me next week.
I will make sure to lose your number, at least for a few days. That's Mark Topkin of the Tampa Bay Times. If there are no moves that the Rays make in the next few days, well, then we'll take a hiatus as well. If not, we'll have another podcast. If we don't have moves to talk about, well, happy holidays, and we'll see you soon.